Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. My golly, I love Saturdays because I bring one of my favorite friends with me to share with all of my friends out there. So how about a favorite friend?
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
I'm glad you're not hanging me out to dry.
I'm feeling generous, just for the moment.
Anyway, today is an interesting guest. A little different from a lot of our guests, because if you get our emails, you know that tonight we're going to be speaking with Alexander the Great. And I was intrigued with Alexander the Great and still am. He was a student of Aristotle in Greece, a great teacher, of course, Aristotle was. And at a very young age, he began conquering peoples. And I believe we're going to get some information from him as to why, what he had in mind. And interestingly, when I studied something about his life, he never subjugated the people that he conquered. He allowed them to live their lives according to the way they wanted to live it. He was intent in bringing civilization to people that he passed along the way. And if you look at a map, the territory that he and his soldiers traveled, it is an amazing journey. And when he finally got to India, he faced people there on war elephants. Imagine being on the ground with a spear and having angry war elephants come charging at you with warriors on their backs. That must have been a thrill. So, Richard, before I get there, I just want to mention something for any of you out there who are not familiar with how we work. When Richard connects with our guest, you could, and he describes their energies, if you see in your mind's eye a picture that you think of represents Alexander the Great, because there are pictures of him, and call him gently, you will have a connection with him. And hopefully feel his energies as Richard describes them. Also, you'll be close to the work yourself, because you see, everybody can work with the right side of the brain and do exactly what we're doing. As a matter of fact, Richard teaches this, and he is a very good teacher at showing people how to connect with all forms of consciousness, beings on the other side. And he does it in such a lovely way. I think you would find it very interesting if you worked with him. He does a beautiful job of teaching this, and anybody can do it. That's the beauty of it. So, with that in mind, Richard, if you'd be kind enough to call. I'm kind of chuckling because what Alexander is doing and saying at the moment. Call him in if you would, and let's find out about his energy, how you feel it.
Interestingly, I find his energy very central. In other words, the man is very much based in his heart. And yet, even though it is heart-based, my experience of him is not essentially that of love, but that of power with associated wisdom. And so my sense is that I don't know who this man's monad was or its origins, but as I say, the basis that I experience of Alexander is very much heart-based. I find that very interesting, very powerful. And the sense of power that the man carried is very obvious. As I said, there is this sense of wisdom that is associated with that power. It's very interesting. It's kind of very, in its own way, consistent with how he lived life, you might say. Very interesting.
That's beautiful. A little different from some of the other beings that you've connected to on the other side. That's great. And so he has a message for those listening today. And if you'd be kind enough to take that, Richard, we'd be delighted.
Yes, I'm most interested to hear what he has to say. I have no clue what he's going to talk about. This is Alexander, and I wish to speak a little about my time, but also about your time, because there are connections between these two that are not obvious to you or indeed to perhaps anyone else. But let me begin with some words about my time. It is true that I conquered many people. You might say I was raised in the context of warmongering. My father, Philip, was a great warrior, a great warmonger, and one who, in his own right, conquered many people. Although I found him to be something of a barbarian, you might say. I found him to be unruly and undisciplined in how he lived his life. And so in that way, he influenced how I viewed things. He was kind enough to appoint Aristotle as my teacher, with whom I studied for quite a number of years. He joined me when I was some 13 years of age, and he taught me actively until I was about 18, though in fact there were breaks in that time, because already I was actively leading armies to defend the territories that my father had already conquered. And I learned a great deal from Aristotle, who, as many of you would know, was a very learned individual in the ways of many things, as the great Greek teachers were. So I was fortunate to have him as a teacher, not only from the point of view of the, you might say, technical information that he taught me, but also he introduced me to the notion of spirituality. I would have to say that Aristotle, whilst interested in the notion of spirituality, was truly not in the same vein a spiritual being as those who preceded him. But he opened a door to me, which I pursued in other ways. And this is not well reported, well documented, the vigor with which I pursued a spiritual understanding. And so I had an understanding of the nature of what it meant to be a human being and what it meant to be a spiritual being. And it is for this reason that, as Carolyn mentioned, I did not seek to enslave or to, you might say, dominate those countries, those peoples that I conquered, because I respected them as people. I respected their cultures, their way of life. And my desire in pursuing the path that I pursued was not driven from the perspective of wishing to impose my culture, the culture that I had grown up in, upon others. Rather, what drove me was seeking to, in my way, unify the world. This might sound a little strange to you, but having been raised by a warmongering father who was very much of the tradition of domination and enslaving people, I had seen the changes that occurred as a result of these processes, and I also saw how what seemed to me relatively short term it was that this domination process remained in place. Cultures that were seemingly destroyed found a way of recovering and then launching war upon the one that had conquered them. And my desire really was to, through my conquering process, you might say, to actually, in a way, liberate the world as we knew it from these processes of war, and in a sense set people free from these warmongering processes by, in a sense, eliminating those forces that might, you might say, compete for military domination, but let the people be free to live their own culture, to live their own lives. And so these threads drove me. Now, I will admit that as time went on, those desires, those attributes became a little lost in the actual process of the tremendous military campaign that we were on. Life became very much about the military process because of what we were doing, the tremendous scale of what we were doing, and those that had traveled with me and supported me along the way became somewhat disillusioned with what we were doing, and in many ways they never truly understood what drove me in the process. And so, in a sense, my ideal decayed, in part because of the demands of simply walking the path that I was walking, and also, as I said, the waning desire of my generals and so on to continue to pursue this agenda. And so in the end, it became mired in the, you might say, the mud of simply campaigning for so long across such vast distances. And as you understand it, this process lasted for not long after I became king at the age of 20 to my death, 33. And so this process really lasted for most of that time. So we were away for the best part of a decade of time, for the most part. And as you will understand, it was a third of my life. And so you might say the ambition that I had might seem a little far-fetched when you consider that I was about 20 when I became king and had, you might say, formulated the essence of this perspective before I even reached that age. It is hard for you in your time to imagine that I might have been in a position to formulate such thoughts at such a young age. But the nature of life in those days was that you matured, you might say, in a much more rapid way than most of you currently do. I was leading armies at 16, as well as being a student. So the notion that that might occur in your world is certainly in the Western world, completely foreign. And so not only was I, you might say, relatively mature as a late teenager in so many ways, so were those that surrounded me, because many of those that became my generals were also taught with me by Aristotle, and really, you might say, were teenage friends of mine in many cases. And so this perhaps gives you at least some sense of those elements which drove me in my life to walk the path that I walked. And as I reflect upon it, as I say, I do see that it got mired in the scale of what we were trying to achieve. And so history records both the success of what we achieved and, in a sense, the failure, because we, in a sense, stopped moving forward when we got to India and became in many ways mired in the infighting and the uncertainty of how to move forward, or, in a sense, how to truly manage to govern, you might say, what we had gathered together, overtaken in a sense. So these perhaps give you a few thoughts on how I view what we achieved. And so there are, in a sense, connections between what drove me and what is happening in your time. Because as I expressed, what I was out to achieve was, in a sense, a unifying of the world, the removal of the military process and the opportunity for people to live in peace, live their own culture and live in peace, interacting with others as they chose, with some, you might say, overarching structure within which that could occur. And you might say, this indeed is what is unfolding in your time, although from a very different perspective. And what I mean by this is that there will not be the requirement for some overarching military controller, you might say, because the understandings will be in place of who and what each individual soul is and what it represents. People who participate in the emerging consciousness will understand that. And they will, by definition, you might say, respect the sovereignty of every individual and respect the truth of who and what every individual human being and indeed animal represents, that they are all indeed progeny ultimately of that one that you call all there is, or prime creator or source. And so this understanding will be in place and in its own way provide the context that in my way I was trying to provide in my time. In many ways, you could look at what I set out to do as being rather naive and altruistic. And in hindsight, I would agree with that assessment. But nevertheless, what we achieved and the way we achieved it was truly, in my view, very special. And so, as I said, I see these connections between what is unfolding in your time and what we were doing in mine.
That's beautiful, Alexander. In looking at your life, the things that you did, I think, could be described as fearless. Your exploits and what you faced and how you accomplished what you set out to do, I would use the word fearless. It just seems like a proper word to use. So I would like your thoughts about being fearless, to be able to walk, well, maybe you had fear, but you acted in a fearless way. Would you give us some insight into how you could operate in a fearless manner.
It is an interesting question that you ask, and it is interesting from two perspectives. Firstly, fear has always been, at least as I see it, from the fall in Atlantis, a very powerful force for humanity. And one of the greatest victories that any individual ever achieves in their life, if they achieve it, is to conquer fear. And I learnt this very young. In many ways, it is one of the things that Aristotle helped me to understand, though in many ways I had begun to understand it prior to working with him. And I realized how liberating it was to be fearless. And indeed, I was fearless. I did not fear for myself. I understood that I was living the life that I was living, and that when my life came to an end, I would cross over and my soul would continue on. And so I was not overly preoccupied with my own survival. Rather, I was focused upon what I wanted to achieve. And so I was willing to put everything, you might say, aside for those objectives. And one of the first things one needed to put aside was fear. So you might say, I was fearless and I acted in that manner. And even in that time, very few people understood the importance and the value of conquering fear and how to go about that. And the second aspect I wish to talk about in regard to fear is how powerfully fear has been used to control people over time, particularly in your time. It is used in so many ways. It is promulgated in so many ways such that people are encouraged to be fearful. Fearful almost of their own shadows. Because if you have people in fear, then you can control them. There are other reasons in the background why those who are ultimately driving that dark agenda upon your planet wish to have people in fear, because they can harvest the energies from those people. However, it is a very powerful mechanism to keep people subdued. If people are fearless, they are much more dangerous for those who seek to control them. And I was never going to have anyone control me, including my father, and history records that fact.
Thank you for that answer. It is beautiful. Something, though, that I want to connect with fear, and that is loss. One reason, in my opinion, one reason that people fear, and I'm sure there's many reasons, is the thought of losing something, whether it is your life, freedom. I mean, there's so many things that people are faced with as losing or loss. So give us some insight how people can manage that, how they can be fearless and yet overcome the thought of loss.
The notion of fear and the notion of loss are deeply intertwined, and indeed they are encouraged to be intertwined. Once you conquer fear, you recognize that focusing on loss leads you into being fearful. The two are associated, though they are not the same. And so I never focused on loss. My path was always, how do I achieve what I have set out to achieve? I never focused on loss in any form. I never lived my life on the basis of loss. And indeed, it is one of the factors that became difficult towards the end as some of my generals began to, you might say, lose heart, because I never considered the possibility of losing anything, including my own life. Though I recognized the possibility, I was not fearful of it and I did not focus upon it. I never went about anything on the basis of loss, but focused completely on how I could achieve my objective. Now, that is not saying I was foolhardy. Rather, I focused upon how to achieve the objective that I had in a manner which was, you might say, as foolproof as possible, as certain as could be possible that it could be achieved. In many ways, there are some powerful parallels between how I approached what I did and that one who has come forth in your time with eBooks for You and Steve Fossett. Steve lived his life in the latter years doing things that many people considered to be things of great risk. And on the surface, they were. But what Steve did was to focus on how to remove the risk. And so he analyzed what he was going to do in great detail, and he ensured that he had in place systems and processes and approaches that eliminated the risk as much as possible. In other words, he took things which to most people seemed very risky, foolhardy, dangerous, and turned them into things which were achievable. And so he set so many new benchmarks in so many areas of endeavor by using processes. And what Steve was doing in many ways was very similar to what I was doing. I knew that I could achieve my goals. It was simply a matter of ensuring that I chose a path that was of least risk, but was focused on achieving the outcome.
Such excellent advice. One of the things that comes to my mind as you were speaking is you're talking about your goals, you're talking about your objectives, and it seems to be one of those things today that people are not, isn't there, it's not strong enough in their consciousness to be goal-oriented, to think of the objective. I might even use the word mission. And so there, to me, there is a lack in some people of analyzing their lives and deciding what they want to do. It seems like you did that at a very early age. And I don't even know if you can answer this. What might we say to people who don't have the kind of goals that you have and objectives that you have or had? How in the world do you wake them up?
There is in your time a tendency to focus upon what you might call goal setting as being a left-brained process, a planning process, whereas really that process is very firmly rooted in an understanding of self, a connection with self, a sense of what your purpose in life is, what is important, what is real, who you are. And most people in your world have been discouraged from even thinking about such questions on a deep level in a manner that I was encouraged to do from a very young age. And so the notion of goal setting in life arises from the sense of who and what the individual is, rather than some made-up view of wanting to make $1 million or whatever it is that is so often applied in your world. And so really awakening people to what I would truly consider to be goal setting is really no different from waking them up spiritually. because it is only when you have some spiritual context for yourself and your life that you can truly begin to set some goals that are meaningful in a true sense. And so, in my view, the beginning of awakening people to the process and importance and value of goal setting is beginning to awaken them to who and what they are, beginning them to the process, awakening them to the process of healing themselves and their lives and their relationships, so they have some basis upon which to stand in the world. And it is only from there that you can begin to plot a path forward. So that would be my view on this.
Well, I just love your views and attitudes. Now, something that you said caught my attention. You were talking about Atlantis and the effect that it had on humanity, and I suspect perhaps on a subconscious level. I was not aware of the fact that people in your time had some understanding of Atlantis. Can you expound upon that a little bit? Was it Aristotle that taught you about Atlantis? And what did he teach you?
My comments about Atlantis really were arising from the context in which I am currently placed, you might say. And so it was not that people in my time understood Atlantis, but rather it was a comment made from this context, not the one in which I lived. Certainly, there were stories of the existence of Atlantis that flowed out of ancient Greece and Egypt and so on, and I was somewhat aware of those. I was aware of not only what Plato had written about this, but also some of the sources from which his material had come. And so there were certainly myths in relation to Atlantis, but these were not really active in my, you might say, life or understanding of life per se.
I was curious about that, and thank you for the answer. What your answer implies is that once someone crosses over to the other side, that they are constantly learning and have perhaps records or information available to them according to where their interests take them. Would you care to comment a little about that? In other words, life on the other side, learning processes, that would be helpful to us.
There are many doors that open when you cross over. As you understand it, the human experience is a very narrow one in so many ways. It is very focused. It is focused in linear time. And when you move into that consciousness, you leave your memories and many of your skills behind. And so when you cross over, it is like doors are opened, understandings come forth. You have access to the past and indeed perspectives of the future. And there is a great deal of opportunity to learn about many things, not just about the history of the planet and of humanity, but indeed understandings of the nature of creation and what creative journeys and paths have been fostered and created elsewhere. And so there is an enormous opportunity to learn about what it means to be a spiritual being, but also learn so much about how that creative process has been pursued on so many levels and in so many forms throughout creation and throughout time.
Thank you. Speaking about time, it brings up another thought that on the other side where you are, that there isn't time as we understand it now, currently. It is the now where the past, present, and future are, you might say, intertwined in one line of experience. Can you give us a little thought about that? If that's the now, how does one on the other side move into these dreams of past, present, and future and get information.
In my view, the difference between the now and your experience of time is actually not as great as it is perceived in your dimension. Yes, it is true that in a sense your awareness of the past has been severely truncated, and in a sense your ability to access the future has been somewhat truncated. And yet, in that dimension, you are aware of the past and the future as notions, as ideas. And part of the way in which this has been shut down is to be unaware, for the most part, of past lives, and you might say the totality of past experience of the monad, or indeed that the incarnated soul actually comes forth from a monad. Most of this understanding has been shut down intentionally or otherwise. And yet, if you examine some of the tools that, for example, I am aware that you work with, for example, returning to past life experiences and healing those experiences to impact what is coming forth in your current life, this really is no different from what is done in the now. It is just that where I reside, yes, my overwhelming experience is the present moment, just as yours is, but I am, you might say, more free to examine the past life paths that the fingers of consciousness sent forth from my monad have walked, and to examine them more readily than you can. Similarly, with the future, it is possible to try on the future and examine possibilities much more openly and readily than you can. And so what you are doing is more actively choosing a future path that you would prefer to walk. And so in many ways, it is simply an expansion of threads that are already present in your experience. And so the shift is perhaps not as massive as you might at first think. Primarily, the difference is a change in awareness, awareness of the truth of the spectrum of time and the ability to move, you might say, through the threads of it more readily and easily, yet inevitably, fundamentally remaining in the present.
Thank you. I would like to give a reminder to our audience. We are moving quickly towards the end of the show. And if there are individuals in our listening audience that wish to ask this beautiful soul a question, now's the time to consider getting on the line. If you want to get your question in before we end the program. With that being said, Alexander, what is in your awareness as far as the near future of this planet and humanity?
As you are aware, the time between the fall in Atlantis and a return to, you might say, the level of human expression that existed before the fall in Atlantis, that was always going to be a defined and limited period of time. It was always set up that way. Yes, there were concerns that humanity may not survive the fall, but it was set up with a great deal of expectation that indeed humanity would survive it. And the work had been done to examine the possibilities, even though those uncertainties continued to exist. And survive, humanity clearly has. And so the question only was, given that humanity had survived, when would they return to that more advanced level of consciousness? And that transition was always tied to the ending of a time when the dark could interfere with humanity. And so, hence, it was tied to the time when the journey of the dark would be brought to an end, which is the time in which you find yourselves. And I am aware that you had the expectation there would be, or you might say, an instant change, a moment in time at the last solstice where this would occur. And as you have experienced, it is a little more spread out in time than that instant moment. But if you reflect on things from a broader perspective, a few days and weeks and months associated with completing this transition really in the scheme of things is but a blink in terms of the totality of creation. Even the time of the fall, in the scheme of the totality of time of a cycle of Brahma, is just a blink. And so, in a sense, this transition is what you might consider, in a broader sense, instantaneous, but in your experience is spread out over these few months. And so what is unfolding is that shift, that return, as is unfolding the ending of those beings and those threads of consciousness and so on, which are associated with the expression of darkness. So what is in humanity's near future? And certainly we are talking very much within the lifetimes of those upon the planet, and indeed the very near future as I see it. There will be this transition returning humanity to the state which existed prior to the fall in Atlantis as a first step, which includes the return of that extraordinary affected physical form where the, you might say, the beautiful spiritual light energies poured forth from the physical body. And moving beyond this level, and this, my friends, is very much upon your doorstep.
Thank you so much for sharing such thoughts with us. It is just beautiful. And I would like to ask some of your another personal experience that you have witnessed since crossing over. Have you stayed pretty much in this solar system, or have you traveled to other parts of the cosmos? I'm trying to get some concept of structure on the other side, so to speak.
As you understand things, there are many dimensions. There are many expressions of consciousness. There are many what you understand of to be strings of reality. And there are many timelines, which you might say are different paths into the future. It can be investigated. And so I would also add to that, there is the ability, even within the current human experience, to, with the right understandings and tools, to, in a sense, travel to anywhere in the cosmos and indeed beyond the cosmos. And I am not wishing to avoid your question, but rather to give you some sense that although I have, in essence, remained within this galaxy by way of the what you might consider the location of my soul, in other ways, I have traveled extensively. I have traveled energetically. I have traveled consciously to many other parts of the cosmos. I have traveled back in time and forward in time. I have watched the creation of this galaxy. Indeed, I have watched the beginning of this cycle of Brahma and built an understanding of how this is executed. And yet I have done all of this from remaining within this galaxy. And so there really is no reason for my soul, in a sense, to move elsewhere in the short term, because there is so much to learn. And also, frankly, it has been of great interest to me to observe and to contribute where I can to the progression of the human experience, and indeed to be as much a part of this emerging transition in consciousness upon your planet that has been long planned, as I am able to participate and to contribute and to witness this, because it is a very special moment, not only in the human experience, but indeed in the experience of all within this cosmos and beyond.
That is beautiful. I have found from the work that Richard and I have done is that the different monads seem to center around a particular objective. And I would think that since you crossed over, you must have had some close connection with your monad. Was your monad on a, say, a special area of work, maybe bringing freedom to people or bringing forth conquerors at the present time? Is it proper to ask what areas your monad worked with?
It is more than proper. It is indeed a very valid question to ask, and of course it is something that I have examined. And there have been a number of paths that my monad has chosen to walk. As you understand it, the overriding direction to the monads was to go forth and experience. However, the particular focus of my monad has indeed been one of leadership. Leadership in the sense of seeking to help those groups within which it sends forth a finger of consciousness to incarnate, where that's appropriate, or simply to participate, to provide leadership and direction for the progression of that group. It has not been so much by way of teaching, although inevitably leadership involves some form of teaching, but primarily it has been a role of providing leadership, as I did in my life.
I have to say, conversing with you has been so incredibly wonderful. What a brilliant mind that you have and you used, and you bring forth answers that were truly unexpected, and I loved it. And I want to thank you so much for being here and bringing forth this beautiful information. I would like to thank you in a special way, Alexander. And I want to thank Richard for the work that he has done bringing forth your answers. Thank you so much, Alexander.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Richard, we have, it looks like, 8 minutes left of the show. And I think that this last question of Alexander really does bring forth an interesting aspect of what we have done with the soul origin readings. And I was going to ask you personally if there was perhaps something of interest with what a particular path monads were taken, or some organization of all of this, or something perhaps that strikes you as being of interest to our listeners with regards to working in this area.
It has been a fascinating area, I must say, Carolyn, to watch these things fold. And in some ways, it's difficult to categorize them in some overarching way. You might say the purpose of the readings for each individual have varied quite markedly. I mean, the one that we've been working with the last week or so has really been very much focused on giving the individual the understanding for them to heal themselves because of what they've been carrying really since the fall in Atlantis. I guess the things that stand out to me overall have been, firstly, the way, in a sense, there's been this roadmap of creation that's unfolded in all of these. The early ones were talking very much about some of the fundamentals of creation as it began, the formation of the monads and so on, how some of these things came forth. The role of Marietta, to an extent, in opening a cycle of Brahma, and indeed mentioning that he was actually waking up before all there is did, which raises a few interesting questions. And the other thing, I guess, over that runs through all of them is that they inevitably carry a message about this time, about what the individual's role is in this changing time. They inevitably have a role to play in what's unfolding in this time. And, you know, just that whole series of examples of messages, you might say, that I know are not coming from you, but from where you're bringing them forth from, you know, in its own way, provides for me very powerful confirmation and evidence that something's going on here. So more than that, I can't say. I mean, I think the other thing that really stands out has been the way these have resonated with the individuals, and some of the more striking examples. The one I can never get from my mind was, I think it was Anne, where you described in detail her house in Atlantis, and her response was, "I know that house. I've been experiencing it for years. And in fact, I thought it was probably in Greece, but never occurred to me that it was in Atlantis." But not only could I relate to everything that you were describing, but I could smell the smells and see the flowers was her experience already. And to have that kind of confirmation coming back from someone who's got, you know, their skills awakened, was truly extraordinary. And, you know, that kind of confirmation is there on some level in some form with everyone. And so they are truly amazing, I think. I find them amazing, these pieces that you bring forth, these pictures that you bring forth from universal consciousness. They truly are quite extraordinary.
Something that I find interesting is Alexander mentioned Atlantis, how he has looked at it since he crossed over on the other side and found how it has affected humanity. And that is something that has proven to be of great interest to me, in the sense that we think of something happening a long time ago. We are aware of Atlantis, perhaps, where the island broke apart and fell beneath the sea, and that was the end of it. But that particular experience has, I don't know quite how to say this, Richard, it has had such a great bearing upon people. And it is so necessary for people to understand the events and what it meant to them and how to heal it. We've had conference calls, in our monthly conference calls, this has been brought up, and it certainly does seem to be something that has, I don't know quite how to say this, controlled humanity, on some level that they don't understand. There's a great healing that needs to be done there. And this has come out, too, in the soul origin histories. And so I would like to mention that to people, that if there is something that they feel needs to be complete, it needs to be done, it might be a place that they can start looking at.
Well, it's like it's almost like a mark placed upon the soul.
Yes.
And it truly is something that needs to be healed. And, it's certainly my impression that most people that are on the planet were on the planet in that time.
Right.
And so they carry that mark, even though they are not consciously aware of it. And the same is also true for many souls in relation to Maldek or Mardek, whatever name you wish to give it, which these days is the asteroid belt, the planet that was blown up in this solar system. That too has left a mark on many souls that in some manner, on some level, needs to be healed. So these things get carried. They're simply an expression of negative energy that needs to be acknowledged and cleared, that's all. But it is important to recognize that they exist, that they are important because they impact life as we live it today. It is a little like what Alexander was talking about, accessing past lives, connecting with past experiences, changing those experiences energetically and impacting the present. It is exactly that process.
Richard, I don't wish to interfere with what you're saying. However, we have passed the end of our show. And
you want to wrap me up,
I have to say goodbye to our friends out there. So this is Carolyn Evers. Goodbye for now.
And thank you, Carolyn, for the wonderful work that you do. Goodbye, everyone.